Good morning, fellow students, and welcome back to another episode of Legacy Weapon, your guide to the Legacy format. I am Jamie.
And I am Drew.
Here on Legacy Weapon, we are interested in getting people up to speed from just knowing how to play the game and not knowing the Legacy format at all to becoming experts at the format eventually, someday, maybe. So, how are you, Drew?
I'm doing pretty great. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Have you been playing any Legacy lately?
Not lately.
Why not? We have a show. You're supposed to do research. You're the Sherpa.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'll get back to you on that.
Okay. we have a great show for you all today. We had talked last episode about the staples in the format. That was part one. We are going to do more staples, but today we wanted to dig down on just one of those topics that we talked about, lands. Lands, of course, as we said, are one of the most important and unique parts of Legacy, of what the mana bases look like.
And as a result, they're really expensive.
Really expensive. Shockingly expensive, unless you have shock lands.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute.
This is the first in a series, actually. We are going to do Building on a Budget. Building on a Budget, yes. Part one, lands. As we said, we are not a budget podcast. We are we think of ourselves as more of like introductory to Spike, like you're wanting to get really good at the game. But we realize that not everybody has $10,000 to buy the optimum version of every deck they want. So
we certainly don't.
Nope. I've got two decks, and one of them, we'll just say, does not run the optimal lands because I have more important things to put that money into right now, like...
The other one runs all of the optimal lands because it doesn't run any lands.
It has 100% of the lands it wants to have. That's true. Actually, that's not true. We can get into that perhaps in a little bit.
All right. Is there a land in the sideboard or something?
No. We'll talk about it in a minute. We are wanting to talk about how you can still play Legacy and still play good Legacy, because we're keeping in mind that at whatever level you're being competitive, you want to be competitive. If you're playing FNM, you want to be able to do well there. If you're going to GPs, you want to do well there. So we are looking at how you can save money on your lands while keeping your deck competitive. You remember last week we talked about the two main parts of the main mana bases, fetch lands and dual lands. So
basic lands too, but we figure you can probably afford those.
I mean, Guru lands are pretty expensive. I think those are kind of nice. Summer Magic, Alpha.
The Therese Nielsen full art ones.
Ooh, so pretty.
Judge promos. Those are gorgeous.
For anyone who'd be interested, it is shocking how expensive the fancy art basic lands are because most of the really, really old cards either aren't good or aren't legal or something. These are the only cards from Alpha that you can play in Standard. Because you want pretty lands, play them in Standard, play them in Draft, play them wherever you want. So a lot of people want them for everything. Shocking. Let's get into how to go more budget on your fetch lands and your dual lands. So you had some things you wanted to talk about, the fetch lands.
Right. So the fetch lands, there's a cycle of 10 of them, right? They've been printed 3 times. The allied color ones, so like white, blue, red, green, the colors that are next to each other on the color wheel, those have been printed twice, most recently in Khans of Tarkir, which is currently in Standard. There are a bunch of those floating around, and
get them now.
The price has gone up since
get them now anyway.
Yeah, but they're still a lot less expensive than the enemy colored ones, which have only been printed once in Zendikar, the original Zendikar. Sometimes what you want are the Khans lands, and in that case, that's great. But if what you want are the Zendikar fetches, well, it turns out that the Khans fetches work as a reasonably good substitute most of the time, and they tend to be half as expensive, sometimes much less than half as expensive. So that's definitely one way you can save a lot of money on the mana base.
Right. Let's say that you were playing a red-blue deck. You would probably have some mountains, some islands, and some... mountain islands, volcanic islands, the dual lands. Well, ideally, you would want 4 of the blue-red fetch lands.
Scalding Tarn,
which is, I believe, right now the most expensive by a
significant margin, I think, yeah.
So that's ideally what you'd want. You would want 4 of the red-blue, because that can get you any of your lands. And then you'd fill in as many other fetch lands you want with something red or something blue. If you are on a budget and you don't have any of the red-blue fetch lands, like I don't have any, you just put in 4 of the green-red, 4 of the red-black, 4 of the black-blue, and 4 of the blue-white, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And you can probably get all of those for the cost of what, two of the red blue fetch lands?
Nah, not all of them.
Are you sure?
Red blue deltas have gotten expensive.
Still gave you one for like $12. Gosh.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I did. Oh well.
That was market price at the time.
Fools that I was.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I traded you a Arid Mesa for like $5 worth of cards.
That was the fair price at the time.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, the moral of the story is you do not have to have the ideal card in order to play Legacy. That's really the takeaway from this episode. And this is just right. The first instance. Would you be better off if you had the on color, both of your colors fetch? Yes.
Sure.
The number one reason is that way you can get either basic that you want. And we talked last time about how sometimes you really want to go get a basic.
Yeah.
But most of the time you're going to want to get your dual. And then the times when you don't, well, a lot of the time that means you already have your dual and you don't care as much which your other color is.
Right.
Moral of the story, play off color fetch lands and you'll be fine. A caveat of this is you can, depending on the deck, play fewer fetch lands and it's fine.
Right.
Now, this does depend a little bit on the deck. For example, Burn, which we talk about as being a relatively inexpensive deck, it has one particular card in it that uses cards in your graveyard as a resource. Mm-hmm. And so cutting, even though it's a mono red deck, cutting the fetch lands there hurts the deck in a extra way. Same thing with any deck using Deathrite Shaman. Cutting fetch lands hurts it a little bit.
Right.
But you're usually going to be fine. If you have just fewer, the ideal list, the professional list of elves, my deck runs, I think it is 10 fetch lands. And I only run 9 because I have, in that one, you want to be able to get green. That's all that really matters is anything that gets green. Mm-hmm. I've got 4 red green. I've got 4 white green. And then I happen to have one of the blue greens. So I'm able to use that. I don't have another blue green. I'm not going to go buy some blue green right now just for that tiny little edge. I just play an extra basic forest, and so I've got 9 fetches instead of 10. It's close enough, and I'm perfectly happy with it, and I doubt I've ever lost a game because of that.
The difference in that kind of change is pretty minimal.
Right.
Somebody has probably worked out the math on the probability of comboing off with that extra land missing versus how much that life loss from having to fetch one more time is going to hurt you. And maybe the probability, actually, maybe the bigger thing is actually the probability of being able to find your dual land. But
yeah,
it's a pretty small difference.
I would be surprised if I had lost a game because of that. If I had, I probably would have been 1 or 2 games ever lost because of that. And
yeah.
As far as a money to win rate ratio, that's a really good rate because I've saved $200 and I've lost, let's say, 1 game.
Right.
That's a lot better. Like if I wanted to put more money in that deck, the next thing I would do would be, you know, get more natural orders or something else. It would not be that. It would be other things that are a more efficient use of my money.
Anyway, Jamie, talking about cards that we're not going to talk about today.
Oh, yeah, cards we're not going to talk about today. Natural Order is one of the cards we're not going to talk about today.
It's not going to be a card we're going to talk about today.
But, okay, it's a $30 card that I've got 3 of, and a 4th one would be nice. It's kind of the moral of the story here is that if you play the second best card on a card that's mostly replaceable, like your 10th fetch land, you're not going to lose much equity in your deck as opposed to the business cards in your deck. Now, that is not to say you can skimp out on the land mana bases entirely. If you just played all basic lands, you're going to have trouble. You're going to have serious trouble. We are not advocating that.
Right.
But if you are able to...
You might be able to get away with it and burn.
In some decks you could. You could redo burn to just not have the card that needs your graveyard, and it would be good still. You know, you could do some stuff. But in most decks, you're going to have a bad time. At least in most 2-color decks, you're going to have a bad time if you try to use all basics. We're not
3-color decks, it's really not going to fly.
Yeah, we're not trying to go real budget in this episode. We're not trying to go like super budget. We're just trying to say how you can save the most money while losing the least win rate. Shaving some on the lands, like using the off-color fetches, is a good way to do that. Cutting fetches entirely is going to hurt you a lot.
But you can trim a couple of fetches and run a few other lands.
For example, you know, just by doing that, I'm slightly more protected against Wasteland. I'm slightly more protected against Wasteland. It's very marginal. I already had some basics. It was fine. The trade-off makes it even closer to a call. It's fine.
Anyway.
Anyway. I did want to talk about the other fetch lands.
The other fetch lands?
The other fetch lands.
Oh.
Do you want to talk about the other fetch lands?
So there's a cycle. I think it's actually only a half cycle. It's only the allied colors. They were printed in Mirage? Anyway, they're just like the what we call fetch lands, the good fetch lands. We'll call these the bad fetch lands for the Mirage fetch lands. Let's not be mean. The Mirage fetch lands are just like the Onslaught, Khan, Zendikar fetch lands, except that they come into play tapped, and the ability does not cost a life to activate.
I actually remember back in Onslaught, people were debating. And by people, I mean me and my friends, and we were all really stupid. We were debating which one was better because, you know, one life versus one life loss versus waiting one turn for that one mana. And, you know, right. I can imagine a format where that was at least debatable. Yeah, Legacy
that
is not.
Format is not.
Yeah. That format is not Legacy. As we always talked about, speed matters, mana matters. The ability to have one mana on turn one, to have two mana on turn two. Is very important.
Right. This also applies to, I guess, there are also a couple of other fetch lands like Evolving Wilds and Terramorphic Expanse, which find any basic, but only basics. And they put that into play tapped.
Can you think of any reason why anyone trying to be competitive would play one of the bad fetch lands?
Can I imagine good reasons?
Can you, in good conscience, suggest people to use these if they are trying to win in Legacy?
I can't come up with a reason.
No, I can't either. That was really, I wanted to make sure, I didn't want to lead you too much to agree with me, but that's really the takeaway, folks. Is
maybe your meta is like entirely burn decks. Even then, you just want to go faster.
Yeah, I'd still want to go faster. We wanted to tell you those exist in part so that, you know, if you really just want, if you and your friends want to do it, and you all are running the bad ones, well, maybe that'll balance out. I don't really know.
They're fun for Commander.
They are very fun.
Totally solid there.
I run all five of them in one of my Commander decks, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But we want to tell you that, kind of like a PSA against drugs, kids. These these are worse than marijuana, is what we're saying. These are like, what? Is there like an opposite of black tar heroin? Like, is white tar heroin a thing? Like,
There's white heroin, but I don't think it's called tar.
Is that less bad than heroin, or just still pretty bad?
I think it's pretty sure it's still heroin.
All right.
That's why it's called heroin.
This is a PSA, kids. If you found it on... We wanted you to learn it from us first. So it's more like sex ed. We wanted you to learn it from us first and not find it on the street, get curious, start experimenting. No. Bad. Bad children.
Yeah.
Stop it. Step away from Mirage.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's about it for Fetchlands.
Right, so let's talk about the duels.
Let's talk about the duel lands.
So there are a lot of different things that look like the duel lands.
Right.
They're all worse. They're varying degrees of worse, varying degrees of playable.
Are there any of the other options that see significant, like, tier 1, tier 1.5 play? I can't think of any, but I'm thinking of, you know, like, the fast lands or the buddy lands. These are all catchphrases, they're all for, we're not going to talk about each of them unless we decide that they are good for you. We've on purpose not done too much coordinating on this part because we didn't want to group think it. We wanted to give you both of our opinions separate.
There have been decks that run the various five color lands, like City of Brass, which taps for mana of any color at a cost, deals you a damage every time it gets tapped. Mana Confluence, which is basically the same thing.
Yeah. Very marginally better Mana Confluence. Don't worry about why.
I think Dredge, which isn't really tier one anymore, does still run some five color lands.
Okay.
There was a Storm variant that was running some. So they're out there, and these are decks that are at least quasi decent, and they get away with it. But I mean, obviously there are some costs here. I mean, dealing you a damage every time you tap your lands.
That adds up.
For most decks, this is not optimal, and it will cause you problems.
If you're not planning to win by turn two, it's going to be trouble because adding that up to 3 and 4 and 5 life,
people play burn decks and you'll die.
Yeah. This is the thing which you have to take into balance. We talk about how, you know, losing a couple life here and there won't matter in most games, and they won't matter most games, but losing a lot of life will make at least that one matchup almost unwinnable. So.
I guess any deck that's going to pressure your life to a wall, if your opening hand is like 5 spells and 2 lands, like, that's great, except if those 2 lands are both City of Brass, then you're going to deal yourself like 5 damage by the third turn, yeah. and that's bad.
Yeah. But nobody plays the filter lands or the any of that, do they?
The filter lands, actually, that's some two color decks do run one filter land.
Why?
Sometimes you want, like, for example, in a blue-white deck.
Let's tell people what the filter lands are. I feel like I've gotten us off the rails here talking about the other duels, but that's the whole thing. We want to explore what the other options are and then decide which ones are worthy of consideration for those people who are on a budget like me. You do it, Sherpa.
I'll do it. All right. So for example, the filter lands, for example, the blue-white one, it taps for a colorless, and then you can pay either a blue mana or a white mana and tap it, and then you can add either a blue and a white, or two blue or two white to your mana pool.
Okay. So as long as you have something that makes white or something that makes blue, and this as your second land, it basically makes all of your lands into blue-white dual lands, effectively, because you can have both blue, both white, or one of each. So as a second land, it's wonderful. As a first land, it's a colorless pile.
Right. So as one ofs in decks, this can be useful because it allows you to use one of your basic lands. So because you do need to run some basic lands in your deck.
Wasteland.
Because of wastelands, mostly. So if you have, say, an island and the blue-white filter land, which is called Mystic Gate, you can make double white on your second turn by playing an island and the Mystic Gate.
Okay.
This is something that I don't think every deck runs it for, but it's occasionally handy to fix your mana in this way.
Now, the thing is, because I'm thinking right now of, you know, other decks that are two colors, the problem is you can't fetch for it, so you can't reliably get it, and it might be nice, but it's never going to give you too much consistency, I guess is the problem.
And I think you really only want it in your slower decks, too, because in faster decks, you may only, decks with a very low curve, they may be able to keep a hand that only has one land in it.
Right.
And if this is the only land, well, that's not a keepable hand. But if it's almost any other land, they might be able to keep that hand.
Now, that's a way to think about it. If you are a deck that never is going to keep a one land hand, then if you only have one of these in your deck and every other land in your deck makes colored mana, then one of these has no opportunity cost, really, over just another basic land or something. You can't fetch for it, but if you have it and it's your second land, it's great.
And it makes your basic lands better.
I guess the problem would be is if you ever ran it as even a two of, you could have an opening hand of two of them, and then you would have two colorless sources.
Right. Kinda you like definitely don't want multiples of these.
Okay.
And this isn't, these aren't frequently actual real budget options either, because most of them, they've only been printed once.
Yeah, they're actually not that cheap. They're what?
It depends on which ones they are, but the blue ones are kind of expensive.
Blue's good, kids. Play blue.
Blue's good, yeah. And you may not, I don't know, I can't think of any decks, at least not in Legacy, that would run any of the non-blue ones.
Okay.
So it's an option out there, and you might want to play it, but it's not really a budget choice.
Have you ever seen somebody running the fast lands from Scars of Mirrodin Block?
So I have seen those, and I think those are a pretty decent budget choice.
They are especially pretty cheap.
The blue-black one is like $5, maybe less.
I think the others are even less than that.
That compares pretty favorably to Underground Sea, which is in the 200s.
So what are the fast lands? What are the fast lands?
So the fast lands is a cycle from Scars of Mirrodin. They're only in the allied color combinations. What it says is it comes into play untapped if you control two or fewer other lands, and then it taps for one of two allied colors.
All right. So it's again, doesn't fetch. It's not fetchable. But if you play it on turn one, it's a blue-black land. It's effectively a blue-black dual land on turn one or turn two or turn three, right? If it's your third land, it still comes into play untapped.
Right, right.
And I guess for a lot of decks, they're not going to be playing a fourth land, or at least they don't care if they do.
Right. So the main issue with these is that, you may need enemy color combinations, and these just don't exist in those colors. And then the blue ones don't count as islands for days. So
D-A-Z-E. It also doesn't count for many days or for weeks or months. If you like keep staring at them, they don't change. They're very stubborn.
It's still not an Underground Sea. I've been staring at this thing for weeks. It's still a $5 card. Ugh.
Right. So yeah, coming back, I feel very repetitious saying it, but it's just that important. They're not fetchable. They are not. They do not have the land type island, which is right. itself really important. So there is that. But that said, if you're having it as, you know, a one of, if you're having it even as a four of in a budget deck, if you're going fast enough,
I think it's totally reasonable.
I would not feel bad doing that at all. There are certain decks, again, if you need cards in your graveyard and you need fetches for that, this doesn't really help you too much because it's not going to be a fetch and it's not fetchable. But if you're just a normal deck who wants to be running green and white cards, say Maverick, which is a deck that Drew knows. Yeah, you don't have any in your deck, but you could, right?
I could. That is a deck that really cares about lands in the graveyard, though.
Oh, yeah, it is. Oh.
It has like eight cards that care about lands in the graveyard.
Subtitle of this episode, Jamie has terrible ideas.
But I have seen blue-white decks and blue-black decks that do run these. And they're weirdly, the ones that are actually very expensive are the ones that are black-red and green-black because the modern Jund runs those and loves them.
Jund, in case anyone doesn't know, is the black, red, green, three color combination.
Right.
Because reasons, don't worry about it.
Reasons, history, magic,
lore.
It's great. Lore.
Someday, no, we're never going to have a lore episode. I don't know. If you want a lore episode, email
us. Let us know. We would love to do a lore episode that's kind of like off topic.
Yeah. I'm sure we will do off topic non legacy shows eventually, but I mean,
we'll try to actually maybe get somewhere about Legacy before we start doing that.
I mean, it's in the name of the podcast, Drew. I think we have to. I think it's in our contracts.
Maybe.
Contract from below.
Ooh. That brings us to the banned card of the day.
Ooh. Well.
Which, just because you said that, is contract from below. And by extension, all of the cards that have anti in the on the text. There used to be this thing in Magic where you would ante a card, and then the winner, each player would ante a card, and the winner of the game got to keep those cards. We decided as a community that we didn't like losing our Black Lotuses to games, so...
So you flip the top card, and I always thought this was kind of poetic in its own way, because if your deck's better, well, you're probably going to win, but you're also then gambling probably a better card.
Better card, right.
So, yeah.
So it's kind of, the odds kind of work themselves out, yeah.
But still, yeah. We all decided, we being all non-sociopaths, that we didn't like that. And they stopped printing them very early. Ice Age, maybe?
Yeah.
Were they even still in Ice Age?
I think there's a couple from like Ice Age era.
Every single one actually says on there, because Ante was even back then an optional thing. You know, you decided ahead of time whether you wanted to be playing for Ante. And they all say, if you're not playing for Ante, remove this card from your deck. Basically, you before there was a ban list, there was a, you really can't play with these cards unless you agree and your opponent agree to be gambling cards. They were things like draw seven cards, but ante an extra card or something.
That's
like that.
That's contract from below. It's probably, if it were legal at all, it would probably be the most broken card in the history of Magic. It's so ridiculous. It's a black mana. Draw seven cards.
Yeah, I actually
did not discard your hand, just draw seven cards.
I actually saw a list of like the top 50 card draw cards, and you know, they got to number three, and they were saying, "Bet you were expecting this one to be number one. Ancestral Recall is number three because things like Contract from Below were number one.
Exist, yeah, it's so crazy. Anyway,
So it's a big category. I will put a link to them because I don't really want to read through every card that has the word anti in it, because most of them are weird and kind of just terrible looking.
There's an awful lot of these like wall of text anti cards.
Oh yeah, like swap this card for a card in your anti, but then anti a second card if you don't concede the game immediately. And I think that's actually one of them. Is that Jewel Bird? Like, I don't know.
I think that might be Jewel Bird. Anyway, they're weird.
We
don't play with those. These are actually banned in Vintage as well, where everything is legal because.
No, these just should not be played. We will link them. Yeah. Don't click the link, kids. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt your brains. You don't need that knowledge. Anyway, they do exist. Again, we want you to learn about it here and then, you know, practice safe magicking in the future.
Right. That is one large category of the whole banned list. So we thought we would mention it. Anyway, back to budget lands.
Back to budget lands. Let's see. Are there any... I'm teasing and holding off because most people in the audience probably know, because we've alluded what to the, before because we use foreshadowing, the good, in quotes, good bad options.
Yeah.
Are there any other kind of fringe options? There are the man lands.
The man lands. I don't think anybody really plays the man lands because they all come to play tapped.
Okay. Okay, I guess it's just in modern.
You know what? No, I will say, actually, I think there are some Stoneblade decks, which is kind of a mid-rangey control deck. It's either, it's usually in blue, white, and black, sometimes blue, white, red. And actually, you know what? Now that now that you say that, I do think I have seen some of the Celestial Colonnades and Creeping Tar Pits.
I was going to say, Creeping Tar Pits, I have seen those. I didn't know if they were... if I was just seeing fringe stuff. So these are man lands, which is a phrase, a slightly antiquated phrase.
There are man lands in standard now.
Yeah, of lands that turn into creatures. You pay a certain amount of mana or do something, and the land turns into a creature until end of turn.
Right.
And each one has different stats. Some have flying, some have first strike, different abilities. The good ones are the ones that are also two colors, because all the man lands...
I think Mutavault is a pretty decent man land too.
Oh, colors, yeah. Yeah. I never remember that one because it's not one of the things, but it's kind of everything actually.
But
Mutavault is a colorless option and it does see play because it is colorless and very useful and comes into play untapped. All the other ones in exchange for this ability to turn into a creature come into play tapped, right. Which, I mean, if you were going to play a green one, I really want a forest or something that comes to play untapped, but you know, a two color card, at least in, you know, standard and modern, we're used to those coming into play tapped. That's not too much of a downside to then get the big upside of having it be a creature that can't be hit by...
It's a win condition that's a land.
It's a win condition that's a land. It can't be hit by sorcery speed effects because it's never a creature on your opponent's turn.
Unless you're an idiot.
Hey, I'm Jamie. I make terrible decisions.
Sometimes you do want to block with them, I guess. I mean, it does come up, but...
The quote-unquote good ones are the ones that are two colors. Those are only in the ally colors, except now in Battle for Zendikar, we also have the black-white one and the blue-green one.
Although those aren't probably good enough to really see Legacy play.
They don't right now. The only ones that I think are good enough to see Legacy play are the white-blue
ones. The blue ones!
Yep, the blue ones. The white-blue one turns into a 4/4 with Vigilance. It costs a lot of money to add.
And flying.
And flying? What?
And flying.
I don't play blue. I don't know these things.
Celestial Colonnades, that's the reason it's really good. It sees a lot of play in modern. It costs 5 to activate, which is way more than the other ones, so that's the downside. But you play this in a control deck, and you're fine with tapping for that much mana.
Yeah, because you're going
to... it has Vigilance, and you still have a mana left over.
Yeah, means you don't actually have to play any creatures in your whole deck, and you just get to dirtle and control and counter and kill and...
make Jamie sad.
Make me sad. The blue-black one, it costs much less. It's much smaller, but it's unblockable. So kind of a little bit of good inevitability there if you can just make the game go along there as well.
So these are maybe, we're talking about these as budget options. These are really more like fringe utility land options.
Yeah.
They are less expensive than dual lands.
They're not cheap.
They're not cheap.
I mean, they're not $5. Those two at least aren't $10. They're more.
Yeah, they're 15 to 20 range.
Right. And you wouldn't want to rely on these because, again, not fetchable. They don't fetch. They're not going to be especially consistent. And they do come into play tapped, which...
so they do slow you down. So I think there are some decks in Modern that will run two or three of these. In Legacy, I think this is another, like,
one.
Run one or maybe two of these.
You do not want two of these in your opening hand. And honestly, you probably don't want these in your opening hand. You want these after you've stabilized.
Your second or third land, maybe. Yeah. You know,
your worst case scenario is slapping this down turn one and holding a Force of Will in case they really try to screw you over for losing your first land.
Yeah, I mean, you can survive, but... It's
rough.
You probably want to be able to play your Ponder or whatever.
Those are the only ones I can think of that actually see play, except for the big hitters, which we're about to talk about. Can you think of
big
any
hitters?
Oh, nope. Well, they're all... No, those aren't good.
The Badlands, which actually is the name of
Badlands is a really good land, actually.
Actually, that is actually
that's one of the dual lands. That's pretty
that's
good.
One of the duals. Yeah,
okay, the other good option, we keep alluding to what is and isn't fetchable. The nice thing about the dual lands is that they are fetchable. We talked about how great that is before, how your green-white fetch land can get you a white-black card if you need black mana. There are a few other cards which are fetchable that have the basic land types, even though they're not basic lands. These are the Shocklands from Ravnica and from Return to Ravnica.
Yeah.
These are exactly the same as the Dual Lands in that they come in all 10 color combinations. They tap for the two colors. They are those two color lands. So you can fetch for the green-black one off of your green-white fetch land.
You can bounce the blue-black one and for your to pay for your days.
You can do it for days if you are playing long enough. And if you're playing days, you're probably playing a really long deck. Miracles lands matchup.
Anyway.
The downside, why they are the bad ones. They come into play tapped, or you pay two life when they come into play.
Right.
You get to pick which. And that's really nice because say you don't need that mana right now, or say that you want the mana available in case you need it for a counter spell, but then your opponent doesn't do anything worth countering. You could do this at the end of your opponent's turn and have it come into play tapped.
Right, hold off on cracking the fetch. Right.
If you're not using, if you don't need it the first turn and you get this instead and it comes into play tapped, you fetched it up just the same and now it taps for both just the same. It's as good as a dual land in that corner case.
Right.
If you're in a matchup where two life doesn't matter, it's just as good as a dual land in that corner case. Now, that's not so much of a corner case, at least if you're only doing it once. Losing two extra life is not going to lose you a lot of games.
Right.
Now, you're not just losing two, you're losing three, because you have to pay one to fetch.
Fetch land, right.
And then, if you're doing it a second time...
Like if you used it to play days, and then had to play the land again.
Right. Or if you then on turn two played another fetch land and got another shock land. And then
also untapped.
Then turn three played another shock land off of another fetch land. You've now just done yourself 9 damage.
Right.
These are the kinds of things that add up. You know, the first life loss that you... The first life that you lose doesn't matter. The last life that you lose matters a lot. And kind of incrementally between the two is how much it matters.
Right.
This is something, though, which you can do and have it be an excellent use of your money. If I could choose between having the perfect mana base and have to skimp on other cards, or have the perfect other cards and have to skimp on the mana base by playing Shocklands, skimp on the mana base all day. You're going to have a better deck at the end of the day because you can still do the good stuff and you just start the game with 16, 14 life instead of 20.
And in a lot of matchups, it won't matter at all.
Right.
They just won't pressure your life total. I mean, or at least they won't pressure it until they've already locked you out. And in a lot of other matchups, it may matter a little, but it'll be so much at the margins that it won't matter, except in those cases where you really actually do have to get two or three or even four fetch lands in the same game.
Right. The times when it matters the most are times, as they said, when you're bouncing your own lands, such as if you're playing days, or Elves has one card that returns forests.
Some lands, yeah.
Right. And one of the reasons why you bounce your lands is to replay them. Well, if you're doing that, you're hurting yourself turn after turn after turn, which can be problematic.
Right.
So there are some decks where it hurts a little worse than others. Mostly there's matchups where it hurts worse than others. If I'm playing against Miracles, the control deck, I don't care. I don't care. I could start a game at 9 life, and it probably wouldn't make any difference at all.
It will make minimal impact in your win percentage, yeah.
I mean, if you're hurting yourself to less than 9 against Miracles, it might be relevant.
It actually might take a turn or two off their clock. But even then, it probably won't matter, right?
Okay, yeah, because by the time they get to the thing that would make that matter, they probably can do 20 already, at once.
Yeah.
If I'm playing against show-and-tell combo decks or... You know, something with Dredge or Charbelcher that's built to take advantage of these cards. These are all just deck names, which we'll talk about eventually. But
right. If
it's a combo deck, it doesn't matter. They're going to do you 20 in one turn.
Most of the time.
If it's a control deck, it doesn't matter. They're not going to do you any damage at all until they kill you.
They've already locked you out. Yeah.
If you're playing against aggro, like Burn or like...
The Delver decks.
Delver of Secrets, the 3/2 that attacks and is backed up by lightning bolts.
Right.
Or
some of the mid-rangey decks like Stoneblade.
Yeah, if you're playing the aggro mid-range kind of things that are playing dudes, you know, 2-mana creatures, 1-mana creatures, and attacking with them, it's going to matter there. Now, is 2 life going to matter in those kind of decks? Probably not.
Most of the time, no.
But 6 is going to start adding up.
Right.
This
is the thing, is that what the Shocklands are really great as a replacement for dual lands, maybe two through four of a particular type.
Right. Now, using myself as an example again, because I'm good at that. in my elf deck, the ideal list, for a variety of reasons, has two bayous, the green black land. It doesn't run any swamps. It runs forests and bayous. I have one bayou. I do not have a second one. I am getting so much benefit off of that first bayou. It is wonderful in the deck because I can fetch it up on turn one if I need black on turn one without taking any pain.
And this deck is almost entirely green. You need the black, but you almost never need a second black.
Right. But if I need to bounce one of them to my hands, I can bounce the bayou. If I need a second black source, I can go get my black-green shockland, the Overgrown Tomb, that I am using instead of a second bayou. But usually I'm only going to get that if I really need it and it's going to win me the game. Or right. I don't need it that turn and it's just going to come and play tapped and I don't care.
Mostly when you need a second black source, the game has gotten pretty grindy and at the time is probably not a huge issue.
Right. And that whole, if you bounce it to your hand and replay it thing, well, I've got the first one.
You've got the first one, right.
The first one helps your win percentage a significant amount. The second one increases your win percentage a marginal amount.
Very marginal.
The diminishing returns kind of cap off there. Like the third one, the second one and the third one are about equally beneficial. It's really just that first real dual land helps so much since you can always fetch it on turn one if you need to.
Right. The only real downside, I think, to actually running the shock land as when you have a dual land, the shock land barely hurts you at all, except for those games where you do draw the thing.
True.
And you actually have to play it from your hand.
True.
And that will happen, obviously. And in the Elves deck, it doesn't matter that much because you're only running two duels. When you start getting into a situation where maybe you're running, if you're running a three color deck and you've got maybe
three of each,
six or eight duels, yeah. And right, when you suddenly you're running, yeah, when you have three shot, if you have three duels and then like four ish shock lands, I mean, you're going to see your shock lands and they're going to deal you some damage. Still, though, you're going to see your fetch lands much more often.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, before we move on, I wanted to thank our sponsor. We are hosted, as you know, here on GatheringMagic.com, which is a wonderful site for articles about Magic. I have recently gotten into the puzzles that they have once a week, and I think those are a lot of fun, actually. Some of them are easy, and I feel real smart. Some I am convinced are wrong and broken, and then I find out what the real answer is and I just feel dumb. So it's fun.
Makes Jamie feel stupid, it's a good thing in my book.
I make terrible decisions. The site itself is sponsored by, and we are sponsored by, coolstuffinc.com, which is a great site for all your Magic singles, all your Magic sealed products, all your peripherals. They are a excellent website. And they have a rewards program that I don't think we've talked about yet, where every time you buy something, you get points on your membership, and then they add up to percentages off of your future purchases, starting at your first purchase. So it's kind of nice. I think you've built up some over time, right?
Because I've bought some cards from them. Yes.
Every time we've bought cards together from them, you've bought it, and I've reimbursed you.
Yeah.
So you've got all the points, and I have none.
At some point, I got ahead of you, and it started making sense. Like, oh, well, I'll buy them because I get a bigger discount, which then is
snowballing. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're so selfless, Drew. You're such a giver.
I know.
Well, we do also have a special sponsor just for this episode, and that is the Serpent Generator Industries. Have you ever gone around your house and just thought, you know what? We need a change. There is not nearly enough snakes around here. These walls are barren of reptiles. Look at this paint that is flat. There's not a single frickin' scale in the place. Susan, we need a serpent generator. Well, now we have somebody you can call up. Serpent Generator Industries has known to supply both the Hollywood and the Holly-less people with both our jumbo-sized, which can encircle an entire house, to our tiny size, which will hide in every single one of your shoes. If you ever have a foe who's afraid of snakes, well, that would probably be illegal. Wink, wink, to terrorize them. But what you do with them is your own business. Wink. Moving on. The last thing which I wanted to talk about was the most recent fetchable lands, and these are the battle lands from Battle of Zendikar. These are in all the ally colors, and they are dual lands in that they are the two land types. You can fetch them up with the fetch lands.
Yep.
They don't have any life loss, but they come into play tapped unless you already control two basic lands. So if they are your third land and your first two are both basics, they come into play untapped. Otherwise, they come into play tapped, and then they untap like normal. Now, if we didn't have the other dual lands, you know, you'd say this is pretty good because you can still get your white-black dual land off of your white-green. You know, they come into play tapped, but then you get them the next turn. You get what you want. And sometimes they'll be untapped.
Actually, can't get a white-black one since they aren't in enemy colors. But
stop correcting my many, many mistakes.
Anyway.
So what do you think about these as far as legacy alternatives?
I'm pretty sure they're unplayable.
I am pretty sure they are unplayable. I have seen people talking about them, and I have given it some serious thought as to if there are decks that could run this. I have been able to come up with one deck that isn't played a lot anymore that I think would do well having a single copy in it. I think Blue Moon could run it as a singleton. We'll probably talk about that deck eventually. It's blue a blue
Moon's
deck.
It's Blue Moon's red blue, right?
It's red. Oh, well, yes. I am assuming
if they
that,
ever print the enemy colored version.
I don't want to readdress these. I don't want to talk about them again after this episode. We're going to talk about them as if there's all 10 because they're going to make it.
Probably will do that.
They probably will. Assuming that there's a blue red one, Blue Moon is a deck that is exclusively blue, except then it runs Blood Moon to hose all of your opponents. Dual lands and non-basic lands because you just played islands. I think it could go in there as like a singleton, as just a way to lose a little bit less life after you've already had your four dual lands or something. I don't know. Even that's a stretch.
I think it's pretty much a stretch, yeah.
I could see that as a budget option because it probably wouldn't hurt you when you're already running like 14 basic islands.
Yeah.
There's not many decks that are running 14 basics.
Right.
It seems fine. It'll come in untapped in the late game. It'll come in tapped in the early game.
But the thing is that
the early game is what matters. The early game is what matters the most.
By the late game, the fact that it comes into play that it's basically the same as a dual land isn't as relevant because you can just get a basic land then because you probably have your colors fixed already by the time you're getting your third land.
Yeah, if you're still fixing your mana when you're on your fourth land, you have had an atrocious run.
Right.
It doesn't fit into any spot that you need it. In the early game, you need lands quick.
Untapped lands.
Right, you need your mana quick. I mean, with free stuff, you could try to say, oh, well, it still bounces to days, so I can protect myself on my vulnerable turn. But then you'd have to replay it again, and it would still be tapped.
Yeah.
Honestly, I hate these cards desperately because there is so much space that they can do with fetchable dual lands. And the fact that they made these tells me that they are not going to make another variant on it for many years. Just, you know, you don't want to oversaturate.
Yeah.
And this is what we got, and this is useless. If they had, like, those fast lands that we talked about, but they were fetchable duels, oh, that'd be great. That'd be wonderful. I'd love that.
Totally playable.
I would run that. I would run that in my green in my elves deck instead of the shock land.
Probably be a little broken in standard though. With fetches.
Well, true. But I'm saying I wish they could have done that next year.
Yeah.
When the fetch lands were gone, maybe put some other things in there to make it worthwhile. But I mean, if you had those without fetch lands, it wouldn't be broken at all. They'd be fine. They'd be the fast lands. Maybe maybe fast lands, but worse even. Maybe say two instead of three or something like that.
Yeah.
Or one instead of two. Fine. I'd still run those in Legacy. But we don't have those. And we're not going to, for many more years, have those or anything else like them because this is the fetchable duels that they decided to make now. So, alas.
As Legacy players, I think we just have to get used to not having nice things, or at least not having nice things that are not expensive.
Well,
I look at these from a standard perspective. They're fine. From a commander standpoint, they're great. It's just, yes, if you're looking for a cheap option so you don't have to buy Tundras,
they are not the way to go.
Gonna do it.
Go get Shocklands. If you have already, If you can't afford original duels, which is fine, and you are already running the full complement of shock lands, just get another fetch land. Just get another basic. You will be happier with just another basic instead of a battle land 99 times out of 100.
Right.
So that is the sad news, since those would be very inexpensive and very accessible. But
yep, they're just not good enough.
It's the hard truth, kids. Even on the budget episode, unless you are doing some kind of weird challenge to yourself to see, you know, how bad of mana base you can still win with, just stay away from them. This is more that PSA. We've gone from the sex PSA. This is the drug PSA. Just say no.
Just say no.
Just say no to Battlelands. Hashtag just say no to Battlelands. And if you call them Tangolands, I will reach through this microphone and strangle you.
Tangolands?
Tangolands. Did you not hear about this?
No, I didn't hear that. Because it takes two to tango.
Okay, yeah.
I kind of like that, actually.
No, you don't. No, you're a bad person. So when they first came out, people were trying to figure out a nickname for them. Because all the good lands kind of have a nickname. The shock lands, they shock you. There's a card called Shock, does two damage. So these do two damage, they're a shock land. The fetch lands, they fetch something up. The fast lands are fast. The buddy lands need a buddy. The check lands check to see if they have something. So they wanted a nickname for these. Tango was one of the ones that was being proposed. And because it takes two to tango is an expression that's only used by old people in America.
I use that expression.
You're really old. No. The problem is, it takes three to have a tango land work. It takes two to tango. It doesn't take two tangoing and then a third guy in the corner watching them awkwardly saying, hey, that's some nice tangoing you're doing here. I'm here too now.
I do that too. Is that... Maybe I'm doing tangling wrong.
No, that's the cha-cha you're doing. No, it's, like, if it was, like, I liked company lands because three is company, even though that's an obscure reference too, or a crowd, like three's a crowd, or the slow lands, I've heard them called, just because, you know, they only come to play untapped later in the game, so they're slow. I will call them slow. You'll hear me, lands. You'll see me, hopefully you'll never hear me say these cards again. This is their time to shine in the what is almost good enough but still not good enough part of the episode. Slow lands is an acceptable name to me. Battle lands is also acceptable and pretty clear, and also what most people are calling them. And I'm sure I've now given Drew the incentive to only call them Tangle lands. Oh gosh, I'm going to lose my mind. I make terrible decisions. I should not have said a thing. If I erase this from the episode, will it erase it from your memory, Drew? Please? Can we say it's my birthday? All right. I think we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you for joining us for this episode. Drew's still thinking about it. we've gone way past where we wanted to be on this as far as time goes. I'm going to see how deep I can cut it. But for contacting me, you can reach me at Jamie7Keller at Gmail or on Twitter.
And I'm at mtgdrewwalton@gmail.com.
The show can be reached at legacyweaponpodcast@gmail.com. Send in your comments, questions. We are going to be having a mailbag episode.
Assuming we actually get enough mail to do a mailbag.
We have mail. We have more mail. We want more mail.
We're always good to have more mail.
It's raining mail. Mm-hmm. Hallelujah, it's raining mail.
The musical stylings of Jamie Keller, ladies and gentlemen.
Until next time, thank you.
It's the greatest legacy weapon.
Until next time, remember, the mana base that works for you is your best legacy weapon. Thanks. Serpent Generator Industries with our new product. Have you ever been at home and the power goes out and you think, honey, we have no electricity, and we have too many snakes. Well, Serpent Generator Industries, formed in Florida because, of course, Florida, has been in that situation, dozens of times. So they have produced the Serpent Generator 5000. If you put in 5,000 snakes, you will get enough juice to power your computer for 5 minutes. Now, we know what you're thinking. You're thinking, you know what? I think I've got, you know, maybe 5,000 snakes around, but probably not enough, not more than that. And I need that good magic online time, and I think I'm going to need more than 5 minutes. we have a partnership. We have a partnership with Bouncing Beebles Industries, who will import the Beebles directly into your backyard. Those little suckers bounce like the devils and attract every snake in your county. Guaranteed. That way, you can power your computer as long as you need. Snake Generator Industries, for all of your snake to alternating current conversion needs.